The Fan on Demand. Put down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome to Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard around the table. Nick Kyprios and Scott Morrison up for grabs today. A number of topics. Yesterday's Hall of Fame, waves of the magic wand. Also, we'll talk about the NHL Awards this evening in Las Vegas. We'll talk about Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves expecting to re-sign with the Blackhawks by July 1st. We'll have a little recap of the Scott Hartnell trade yesterday going to the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for RJ Umberger, and also special guests on the program today, Vancouver Canucks head coach Willie Desjardins, also New Jersey Devils general manager Lou Lamoriello. So big show today. Glad you're with us. And the first thing, gentlemen, I think we should discuss, I'm sure you guys had a good chomp at this yesterday, but we'll revisit it since it was official at 3 o'clock Eastern yesterday when you guys were off the air. There's an old saying, when you plant a tree, you whisper at infinity, or you whisper at immortality, I suppose, or wink at it anyhow. So who goes in yesterday? It is Rob Blake, it is Dominic Hasek, it is Mike Modano, it is Peter Forsberg, and it is finally Pat Burns. Overdue, certainly, but good to see the Hall of Fame corrected a mistake that was made so many years ago. Bill McCreary makes it in as well, former NHL official. What jumped out at you guys right away yesterday when all those were named? The fact that these guys are in or
in? No. They're all, I don't think anybody can really debate any of those names. Slam dunks, pretty much. Rob Blake probably would be the one that you would sit there and say, does he get in now? Does he get in a year or so? But other than that, star players in their generation and deservedly in the Hall.
What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, the four players, no arguments. I mean, they're all very worthy and deserving. To Nick's point, maybe Blake is one you put in. Is he a guy that waits a year or two? Does a recce step up? It's one omission that I think will be, you know, he'll be in within the next ballot or two, hopefully. But what really jumped for me was I really liked the builders category. Great acknowledgement for Bill McCreary, who's been an outstanding official, done Olympics and various international tournaments, and obviously a ton of NHL games and Stanley Cups. And Pat Burns, I've been a big proponent for several years now for Pat to be in. Disappointed that it didn't happen earlier, but very happy that it happened yesterday. And truly deserving, and as I say, the circumstance of what he went through was so unfortunate and sad, but a great acknowledgement for a great coach.
Darren Millard brought this up yesterday, whether or not, you know, did they miss the boat on a sentimental choice?
Yep.
Not just the fact that he fits the criteria, but, you know, should they have done it when he was still alive? And you know, I can't recall what he was up against, and maybe it was just, it didn't fit. Maybe there was...
It fit. Let's be honest.
I can't recall. Do you remember what he was up against? It completely fit.
And
do you remember who he was up against that year?
Don't recall.
Because I can't recall either, so...
But I think when he was available to go to the Hall of Fame, everyone thought that he would. Everyone just said, is this just old grudges that are being played out?
Quite candid. You know, when I say this, I don't think the Hall really cared whether or not, you know, that it was a feel-good at that time situation. It is what it is.
But I think further to Darren's point yesterday, I think his point was the right one, that, you know, regardless of sentimentality, and it would have been nice to see Pat Burns celebrate the honor of becoming one of the immortals in the Hockey Hall of Fame, to see him celebrate that with his family. Regardless of that, regardless of the feel-good story in the NHL, coach of the year 3 times.
Stanley Cup champion.
The longevity. And not just in the NHL as well, but his work in junior hockey. Like, if it's not just for the NHL as well. This is the Hockey Hall of Fame. And you look at the work that he did outside of the NHL. It's remarkable. And it should have been obvious, and it should have been a slam dunk.
An assistant coach with Keenan on Canada Cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
91.
And he was part of a world junior team, as you guys very well recall, in Piashtani with Bert Templeton, who, outside of one player, sent every single team member to at least one game in the NHL. Like, he was part of some significant teams. There's no way that Pat should have waited this long to get in the Hall of Fame. I think we could all be on the same page about that.
I agree. And as I said, I was disappointed that it didn't happen earlier. It didn't happen while he was alive. I think, and I don't want to speak for the selection committee, but I think I understand perhaps what some people, some of the issues they might have had is that if there was any discussion or anybody within that committee who didn't necessarily feel Pat was a slam dunk right away, they get so much criticism for their selections annually anyway and second guessing that when you do something that is viewed as being sentimental, you leave yourself open for second guessing. They erred on a side of caution of that side.
If they were more transparent on how you get there, do you think the criticism would be less? As a writer?
At the end of the day, it's who they select. You're going to agree or disagree regardless of the process of being there. I think people would love to see more information about how they do finally arrive at that group.
And who voted for who.
Is that the way it is in baseball?
Baseball is completely transparent. You see who voted for who. And sometimes if there are...
Do we need to go down that path?
I would think so, considering how long it's taken Pat Burns to get in, how long it took someone like Fred Shiro, for example, to get in. That was another omission, and that was, again, many people suspect old grudges about how the Philadelphia Flyers played, being played out in the Hall of Fame selection committee, regardless of how he was the one that, you know, heralded in, as much as we talk about tough hockey, heralded in, you know, the Anatoly Tarasov Soviet system of play in the NHL, which totally gets overlooked.
And assistant coaches, there's a lot of innovations
Absolutely.
For his day.
Mike Nicklock, he was the first one to put an assistant coach on the bench. He was an innovator long before his time, but many just feel it was petty grudges that get played out. And you can do that when it's anonymous. You can have your feuds, you can have your bias when you live in anonymity.
You would hope, when you have a committee, I think there's about 18 people or something like that, that your grudge against me wouldn't be able to be that widespread.
But show me evidence of the contrary.
Well, then you just like to, you know, and it comes back to they don't want to get into having to debate publicly why someone isn't in or why someone is in. You don't want people who are being considered for the Hall of Fame to all of a sudden have to be critiqued and made to look like they're not worthy. Yeah. That's, you know, when you're of that stature, you shouldn't be second-guessed of that nature publicly. So that's one of the reasons why they don't get into whose name was around the table yesterday.
That's a good point, too, because if it is completely transparent, you can get bullied into making a popular choice just because it's the popular choice, not necessarily the right choice in your mind.
Well, unless you have the balls to stand up and say,
but that's just
this is how I believe and this is what I thought, and you know what? Sorry, but I'm not going to be bullied. I'm not going to be intimidated.
And isn't the baseball, I should have known I voted many years ago and then haven't done it, but it was a long time ago, trust me. But theirs is a whole different selection process as well in terms of who is eligible to vote, baseball writers from across the league who have a certain number of years of service.
And what they do, I think, that maybe the Hall of Fame in hockey may want to look at, if there's one person who should go in the Hall of Fame, one person goes in. If there's eight, then eight go in. If there's none, then none go in.
Well, that was the other thing that jumped out about yesterday was the volume. Because I can't remember the last time they had six people going in 1 year. Maybe there was recently, maybe the year when they introduced the ladies. But
No. Are we every other year we're going to put in a woman?
Don't know. I don't know that's...
Is that a mandate?
I don't believe so. I mean, every year they're available, and we await for the day when Cassie Campbell-Pascal goes in. I think that's pretty much a two-foot putt. You may even go back in time and find women from the 40s or 50s that were instrumental in growing the game. There's a mayor right next to the city of Toronto in Hazel McCallion who played the game, who helped grow the game for a number of years.
Builder?
Absolutely. Right, so there's a number of women that are available for recommendation. Again, part of the process is someone has to bang the drum and make the case too. Someone has to stand up and say, "This is why Eric Lindros belongs in the Hall of Fame."
There's a question. Do we agree on that one?
And there's the issue in itself. That is there anybody there for Eric? Usually, you know, it probably starts, you know, with someone predominant in the hockey world campaigning for guys.
Absolutely. And sometimes it takes a number of years longer. I mean, how long did it take Dick Duff to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame? And there was someone in there, maybe it was Jim Gregory, maybe it was someone else that really banged a drum.
Well, Dick was 2006. It was the year I got my award.
That's when you were in as well. So you're right, Nick. It does take someone in there to bang the drum. Is anyone in there banging the drum for Eric Lindros? Because from my perch, in a lot of ways, when you looked at Pavel Bure going in, it almost seemed to me as if that was the runway for Eric Lindros to get in. Because
for me, it was Cam Neely.
That was a Cam Neely for you?
Cam Neely.
Prototypical player, similar stats.
Short career
injury.
Peak performer.
I think his only major award, correct me if I'm wrong, was the Bill Masterson trophy.
So he won didn't he win the Hart in 94?
I can't remember.
Four?
Did he win a major award?
He won the Hart once.
Is this Lindros or Cam you're talking about?
Lindros.
No, I'm talking about Cam.
Oh, I'm talking Cam.
Right. Did Cam win a major award?
No.
Didn't win a Stanley Cup?
No.
Similar stats.
Junior Memorial Cup with Portland. That's about it.
Similar stats.
Yep.
Except maybe in his corner, there was a Jacobs, and in Eric's corner, is there a Snyder? Is there anybody?
Or if you look at Boston, Harry Sinden, for example, would have been the one beating the drum for someone like Cam Neely. Is there anyone inside that would have been beating the drum for Eric Lindros? Having said that, Bob Clark has gone on record. Because normally you'd think the feud would burn between Bobby Clark and Eric Lindros carrying through to the old Philadelphia days. But Bob Clark has stood up numerous times and said, I think Eric belongs in an interview.
But when the mics are off or the pen and paper are put down, is he calling anybody else up and saying, boys, do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference there.
Absolutely. Where are you guys
at? Well, he's on the committee now, so he just has to look around the room.
Where are you guys at on Lindros? In or out?
Oh, I think he's in. Should be in.
In. And I think when this year or next year, if he's not, we'll be having the same conversation. And you know, whether or not they feel the pressure or not, did they feel the pressure on Pat Burns that they missed him in the last few years?
I would think there's been a public outcry. I would think so too.
Every year there was an outcry.
And I would probably think that they'd feel it every year that they don't put in Eric Lindros.
It's like this weekend, a lot of writers had the story just ready to hit send for when Monday at 3 o'clock came out for Pat Burns not being in the hall again. I mean, everyone sort of wrote their article on the weekend. Scott, you know, you anticipate news and you sort of write it. I'm sure you massage it.
Well, you've got it in your head at the very least. Yes.
Here's what's going to happen when Pat Burns doesn't get in again. But a great day for Pat Burns' family.
And give the committee credit. Well, as I say, we're quick to second guess. They got it right yesterday.
Yeah.
Six great choices.
Any oversights? I mean, there's some guys that are available for the first time now. And you mentioned Mark Recchi, and that's kind of an obvious one. Where he goes in eventually. But there's been some other ones. I mean, there's always been the Chris Osgood question. 400 wins is a lot of wins. You know, and there's the Stanley Cups there. There's a question about Mike Vernon. If you want to go further, there's Claude Provost with 9 Stanley Cups in his hip pocket who doesn't get in. Listen, Lauren Chabot and Rogie Vachon.
For me, I think it's easy to... And, you know, up until this next generation that's gone in, it just seemed like the magic number was right around 1,000 games or 1,000 points, and if you hit certain criteria, then you're worthy or at least a candidate. For me, I'd like to see the scope broaden in the hockey world and start acknowledging guys for their value outside of stats, third and fourth line guys.
Then you know what, Nick? Then Claude Provost goes in. He would have been a Selke Trophy winner in the 50s and 60s if they had the award then. He was Bob Gainey.
The Bob Gainey of his day.
Find those stars that were great complementary players or role players. So I think I heard you the other day throw out Adam Foote.
Absolutely.
Right? Rod Langway? Adam Foote.
Well, when you think of like the defenseman, and sure, a guy like Nicholas Lidstrom was fantastic defensively, but he also would anchor a power play. This is my point about Adam Foote, too. When you think of defensive defensemen, how many are in the hall of recent note? You have Leo Boivin.
Well, too often we judge defensemen by offensive numbers.
That's it. But where are the defensive defensemen in the Hall of Fame? Why does that, to your point, Nick, does that never get the nod?
So for me, I look at, a Chris Draper, who is one of the best typical fourth line energy guys in the history of the game.
The best $1 player ever.
So, you know,
it's true.
Why aren't we talking about him as a guy? Steve Larmer.
That's another great one.
Steve Larmer. Like, I don't know what the exact number was. 800 plus, I think, was his consecutive streak.
Mm-hmm.
And he shut it down himself.
Over a contract situation.
Right. And how do we not acknowledge that as a Hall of Fame type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just...
As I say, too often we get caught up in numbers.
It's almost an afterthought to think of these guys that way, you know? I mean...
The other hot button name that's always been out there...
And I like Foot, though. That's...
I think Foot belongs in there. I know mm-hmm. I may be in, and we all may be in the minority on Adam Foot, but you look at that Colorado Avalanche team, and there's such a premium put on Sakic and Forsberg, and with good reason, and Blake and Patrick Waugh.
And Olympic gold.
Absolutely. And became that prototypical shutdown defenseman. Right, Nick? Like, every time, you know, the top line was out there, who's playing D? Oh, it's Adam Foot. Put out Adam Foot. You know, he's not going to join the rush. He's not going to anchor your power play. But put him out there, and he's going to flip the pencil on the other side and use the eraser. That's what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. Adam Foote's always done. Where's that represented in the hall? One person who I think should be in there as well, and we've banged this drum for a while, is Don Cherry. As far as growing the game, as far as building the game, as far as you know, being someone who attracts people to the game of hockey. Some love him, some hate him. everyone has an opinion on him, and everybody knows him. But as far as growing the game of hockey, Don Cherry's done a remarkable job, and I think belongs in the Hall of Fame. Some type of accolade.
I took a beating from McLean when we were at the final when they announced the Foster Hewitt and the Elmer Ferguson Award winners, and about why Don hadn't won the Foster Hewitt Award, and they just said, you know, not my vote, but certainly when you
too
think
controversial.
Of, think
just say
being,
it. Well,
just
I think too controversial, times, and he's rubbed too many people the wrong way. That's why he's
probably.
Not in.
But that certainly split right? the vote, that's
should,
for sure.
Shouldn't factor. But that shouldn't factor. I mean, you don't have to like someone to do business with them. How is this any different?
No, I'll give you another one, Jeff. It's like trying to get a membership into a golf course. Some guys get in and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
How is that any different?
It's not.
So people get denied.
But eventually, Pat Burns gets in. But eventually, Fred Shiro gets in.
Hey, listen, I hope you're right, but it goes back to what we said is that, you know, we're not all sure the criteria or how people come to certain conclusions and where is the cutoff between, you know, what you've done on the ice or what you've said or done off the ice.
Yep.
We don't know where that line's drawn. And until we do, then we'll always be in a position to second guess.
You put grapes in, Scotty?
Yeah. I mean, you think about, I was certainly, at the very least, I would give him the Foster Hewitt Award. Yeah. That's the starting point there. The other, you'd have to examine what the criteria is for what a builder and the contributions you have to make and whether that fits from being in a media role. But it'd certainly be up for debate, that's or consideration.
A couple things quickly. Looks like the Blackhawks and Jonathan Toews alongside Patrick Kane will be signed before July 1st, may happen as early as next week. Is it another haircut, hometown discount?
No,
for you guys? Where do you put the decimal point now for these two?
You know what? It'll be interesting to see if it's a Crosby-Malkin situation where you pick a number and it's split.
Both get the same.
And both get the same.
Did that last time, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was identical last time.
So.
Would you pay them the same?
If I had to value one over the other, it's Toews over Kane.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's too many people that would say otherwise. And Kane's made great strides.
Certainly.
Great player. Mm-hmm. And in a different scenario, would be the highest paid player on his team, mm-hmm. except he's got number Toews 19, in front of him.
Number 19.
Number 19.
Let's get to our first guest. He is a general manager of the New Jersey Devils. Known by everyone in hockey, no stranger to this broadcast as well. A pleasure to welcome back to Hockey Central, Lou Lamoriello. Lou, good afternoon. Thanks for doing this.
Good afternoon.
Pleasure. Yeah, pleasure to have you on, Lou, certainly. I would imagine there was a smile on your face yesterday when just after 3 o'clock it was announced by the Hockey Hall of Fame that Pat Burns finally enters the hall and finds his rightful place down at Yonge and Front Street. Your thoughts on Pat Burns?
Well, you're certainly correct. I spent quite a bit of time, both while he was coaching here and certainly through a very difficult time. And if you look over his career and what he's accomplished, well-deserved and really ecstatic about it.
What, in your estimation, Lou, made Pat special as a coach?
Well, first of all, he was very much misunderstood. Very soft in his own way, came off sort of as a tough guy, which he was, but he knew how to find the right button for different individuals. And he had a knack of getting the right people on his side at a given time. And, you know, here in New Jersey, I thought he did a tremendous job with the people that we had at that time. He was the perfect coach for us, for that team that we had, and the buttons that had to be pushed. And certainly winning the cup to him was probably the biggest thing in his life that he had not accomplished, got there close a couple of times, and he did a tremendous job here.
Lou, like many guys like Pat Burns or some of those guys that are known as a bit of a hardcore guy, did you see a lot that the public didn't see behind the scenes with Pat?
Absolutely, without question. He and I had many closed door meetings because, his perception at times became a reality, and it wasn't really what he was. And in other words, he tried to address things head on, which we all like to, but we had to try and get him to be just a little more diplomatic at times. It might be a lot easier, but he made it difficult on himself, and really not intentionally. He just had no patience. Maybe a lot of his past came out, but I spent a lot of individual time with him, and I know he, as I said, not to exaggerate, but he did everything necessary to win and had the respect of the players while he was here in New Jersey.
How much did you talk to him during your cup run of 2003, specifically the series against Anaheim? I mean, and going into that game seven, there was some speculation that Pat wasn't going to play Ken Danico, for example, and Ken was, fired up and he really wanted to play, and there was thought that he might get scratched. Pat put him in there, had the right feeling for the room, had the right feeling for the player, and that was one of the best games we've seen Ken Danico play. How much would you have talked to Pat during that entire process, and your thoughts on how Pat handled guys?
There's communication all the time, but I will say this. We had three defensemen at that time, Kenny Danico being one of them, that were in and out of the lineup.
Yep.
And there was a meeting prior to the final series that, one might be in, two might be out, would have to be, unless there was a unique situation, an injury. And all three players got together and that they would not be a distraction. Kenny led that charge with reference to whatever the coaching decision was, whatever it was, we would all, respond to it. And I will tell you, even going into that last game, Kenny never, as much as he would have liked to play, never tried to, say how important it was to him. It was all about team, and that's what I have to, and I do love about Ken Danico. And the decision to put Kenny in, we just came off a loss at a sixth game. We had a tough night out there. We had to go back home. And I think that Kenny's insertion was a lift to the whole team with reference to just who Kenny meant, what Kenny meant at a given time. And as you recall, we shut them out. It wasn't even a game.
Pat was Coach of the Year three different times, Lou, as you know, and including one with your team. How remarkable is that achievement?
Well, when you think about it, with three different teams, so he had to go in at a given time when maybe they weren't performing at the level they should be, and he found a way to get them to that level, and everyone else in hockey recognized that, and I think the recognition that he got from the outside, because at times Pat wasn't the most liked person. Pat never held what he was feeling, which I thought he did a great job here in New Jersey. Never lost focus. I don't know if we'll see it again.
Hey, Lou, speaking of that, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this. Could a Pat Burns style of play be successful in today's game? And would this generation of hockey players embrace it?
Well, first of all, the answer to your question is yes. And secondly, I think it depends upon the character of the team, the makeup of the team. And I would answer that yes, because what Pat did is what, in my estimation, is the fundamental part of a coach, is holding all players accountable to who they are, in the role that they play, no matter what that role is, and getting them to understand how important they are, but not getting out of their role and not also being held accountable because they affect the other people. And Pat had a knack of doing that with all types of players, whether they be an A player, a B player, a C player, whether they be on a top line or the fourth line. And at times, you know, certain types of players had a difficult time accepting it, but when, you know, they went on in their careers, they realized how important it was. So the answer is yes in both, but certainly the personnel would depend upon, you know, how long it took.
It's a great day for the Burns family. Pat Burns goes into the Hockey Hall of Fame, as announced yesterday, just after 3 o'clock Eastern. Lou Lamoriello, New Jersey Devils general manager, with us on the horizon. Friday, round one. Saturday, round two of the NHL draft. You're back in, Lou. You got the pick. How do you characterize this year's draft? When you look at where you're selecting and the nature of the first round, the second round, is it a deep draft? Is it a thin draft? How would you characterize it this year?
Well, actually, I just stepped out of our meetings here in New Jersey, and certainly I am getting now all the information together from all our scouts. And, you know, their perception is that the consensus stops at a certain point in the draft. And after that, it's really, you know, who can you find that maybe is a little different. But I think the consensus, as I said, is one of the worst for the recent years from our perspective here throughout our scouting staff.
Lou, the feeling going into this week that I've talked to many people is that this weekend has a different feel than others, and some have suggested to me that they've never seen a draft where so many big names are potentially available. Do you see it the same way?
That's, you know, that's the perception.
We're not tampering here, Lou. Come on now. Give it up.
You know, this, to answer your question, this is probably the most unique year in my career, that here we are, we're preparing for a draft. We're getting letters from agents that they're bringing players into Philadelphia to be interviewed. You have, you know, I mean, I don't know where to turn with it, quite frankly, but we have to find a way. But yes, I'm as confused as everyone.
What do you think of that process, Lou, of being able to meet with players before July 1st?
I'd rather not give you my opinion because I'll get in trouble.
What a perfect way to conclude, and we're out of time anyhow. Lou, thanks so much for sharing memories of the great Pat Burns. We appreciate it. Best of luck at the NHL entry draft this weekend.
Good luck, Lou.
Thank you. Thanks, fellas. Thank
Lou Lamoriello, New Jersey Devils general manager. That's quite a good question there, Nick Kiprios.
Yeah, I've been around the block.
Yeah, no, this isn't your first rodeo, as they say. We will take a break. We will talk to a new head coach in the NHL. He is a Vancouver Canucks bench boss, Willie Desjardins, officially announced yesterday as the 18th head coach in Vancouver Canucks history. So Willie Desjardins, formerly of Texas, formerly of Dallas, formerly of the Medicine Hat Tigers, now of the Vancouver Canucks, joins us when Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park, returns to the Sportsnet television and radio networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard. Around the table, Nick Kiprios and Scott Morrison standing by for Willie Desjardins, Vancouver Canucks head coach, the 18th in that franchise's history. So we'll talk to Willie about that in a couple of moments. Oh, he's there. Perfect. Willie Desjardins joins us. Officially introduced yesterday as the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. He joins us on Hockey Central. Willie, first of all, a day late, but congratulations nonetheless. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
The pleasure is all ours. Congrats, as always. Why, out of all, because you became a very, very hot button coach even before your team won the Calder Cup, and congratulations on that. Why Vancouver? Why was that the right fit for Willie Desjardins?
There's lots of good things about Vancouver. You know, it's a Canadian market. That part's good for my family to get back to Canada. They have a great fan base. I really like the leadership on the team. I think they have some real good people. I think they're real hungry to win. You know, I thought I like Trevor Linden. I like, you know, he spoke to my team a couple times, and I just like the things that he thinks are important. You know, and I think he wanted me, and I think that was important. And I just, you know, you see the market here. You saw when they were at the going to the Cup. Like, the fans are great here. It's a really good group, and you know, you get something going good, they'll be totally behind it. So I think it's just a great place.
Hey Willie, describe the process between winning the championship in the American Hockey League to being named head coach. The way I saw it the last probably month is I compare it a lot to musical chairs. There's only a certain amount of chairs. There's a certain amount of people playing the game, and someone's going to get caught. Was it a good experience for you? Was it a kind of surreal sometimes how quickly things moved?
Yeah, it was. It was interesting because, you know, you're playing, but you do know how many chairs are there, and the chairs are going quick. And I was thinking, you know, before that music is going, all those chairs are going to be gone. But it was fortunate the way it turned out for me. You know, I just think it's just the nature of our game, and you know that. For me, I just wanted to win the Calder Cup. Like, that was what I wanted to do. That was my goal. Too many people put in too much energy to try to start thinking about something else at that time. So my players were great, and it was a great group to be with down in Austin.
You had the great line yesterday, excuse me, when you said that you promised your wife that one day you would be a head coach in the National Hockey League, and it only took 25 years. What took so long?
I don't know. I guess I started slow. I don't know. I came from a long ways back, I think, for one. Like, you know, I started as an assistant coach in the University of Calgary, and it takes a time to work through the organizations, you know. Like, maybe if I would have gone junior hockey earlier, I think it would have been a quicker route. And the other thing, I went to Europe too a little bit, which hurts in there sometimes, but I really enjoyed the places I was at. Like, every place I've been, it's not like I have to get out of there. I've liked it. I've liked the players. And you know, when you really like where you're at, sometimes you're not looking forward to the next place, and that's what you have to do sometimes to move up the ladder, I think.
You know, a lot has been made, speaking with Willie Desjardins, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, a lot has been made about the Medicine Hat Association. I suppose if that's true, then Ken Holland may have a job for you somewhere down the road. But how legitimate is that? How strong a bond is there between you and Trevor Linden, which traces back to Medicine Hat?
I would only talk to Trevor probably four times prior to this. So it's not like it's a super strong bond. I think his mom was really great for me. I think she kept telling Trevor, you know, this guy can coach. He's pretty good. And so I think Trevor must have just got tired of hearing it, so he finally hired me. But she's a good supporter. And I think one thing, I know for me, I really appreciate when people do things for me. And I appreciate Medicine Hat for that. Maybe Trevor feels the same way, and that's why there's a bit of a connection.
Hey, Willie, what have you gotten out of learning about this hockey club the last little while that you believe that they're good enough to compete next year, but they certainly weren't good enough to compete last year?
Well, I think you have to look, for me and a player, if they've done it somewhere along the line, then there's a chance they can do it again. If they've never done it, then it's harder to believe they can. And this team has won. They've won. They're in the final. So there are some really good people here, and I think that, you know, they didn't have a great year last year, and I think they're going to want to redeem themselves. I think they're going to come back, you know, wanting to make good things happen. So that's what I believe.
How would you describe yourself as a coach, Willie, in terms of style and philosophy?
I guess my philosophy, I want to play hard every night. And I want to I want to make sure the team's ready. Like, when we go on the ice, we go to play hard. That's what I believe. Like, whenever we go, I don't care if it's for practice. You know, I don't care how short we go, but I want to make sure that we're ready to play hard that night. And I don't want to leave our game on the practice rink. I want to make sure when we get to the games, we have energy and we're prepared to go.
You know, when Trevor Linden was named president of hockey operations for the Vancouver Canucks at his press conference, he talked a lot about style of play for the Vancouver Canucks. When you interviewed with Trevor, how much of the combination was about style of play for next year?
There was quite a bit of it, but I think the reason I was being interviewed was because they like the style that I've coached. And it's not just last year. Like, I had that style when I was in Medicine Hat. I had that style in Austin. So, for sure, I like an up-tempo style. You have to adjust a little bit to the players you have, but you know. But they know if I have that type of team, then that's the way I'll coach.
Well, can you maintain a style of play if, in fact, that, you know, maybe the team doesn't score as much as you'd like, or you're not getting the big save?
Well. You know, you can't. You have to. You got to be able to defend. Like, you know, I think most of the offense comes if you're quick breaking out of your own zone, or if you can create some turnovers for your transition. Those are your two best chances of creating offense. So that starts by defending. And you know, if some things are happening that way, then we got to make sure we can defend, and we'll be built that way. We're prepared to work hard. The forwards will come back to make the defense job easier. And we'll get back to pucks quick so we can break out. So that'll be a big part of our team. And then when we get the puck, then we're going to want to jump on the offense.
Do you have the ability to hire your assistants?
Yeah, it's going to be something that we talk together as a group. Like, that's the one thing I really like here. It seems like it's not, you know, things are thrown out on the table a little bit and everybody looks at it. And then as a group, you come up with the best decision. So I think they'll listen to, you know, what I have to say in that area, and then as a group, we'll make a decision.
Listen, Willie, we're going to let you go on that. The president of hockey operations for the Vancouver Canucks is an old Medicine Hat Tiger. The head coach is an old Medicine Hat Tiger. We'll see if Hunter Shinkara can make the team next year and make it a trifecta. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Okay, thanks, guys. You have a great day.
Willie Desjardins, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. What do you guys make of the hire?
I like it. There's a lot of people that emphasize that, whether you're Trevor or Jim Benning or now Willie, that no one comes in with prior experience, NHL experience at their positions.
Yep.
But I'm okay with it because I don't think we're staring at a guy that's in his early 30s now making the jump to the NHL for the first time. I like the fact that he is 57 years old and that, you know, there's different, besides not having the NHL experience, there seems to be, you know, a stability with Willie that he's been around. You're not pulling the wool over his eyes. He's been around too long.
Yep.
Around this game to know that you know, you're not giving it your all or you're holding back. I'm okay with it. It doesn't bother me that he comes in without NHL head coaching
experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
He certainly paid his dues.
Oh,
25
yeah.
years to get there.
And
he seems like a genuinely nice guy, and that seems to be the reviews from, you know, the various stops that he's had.
But we know where they finish sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. But the one thing is, maybe given his age and obvious maturity that comes with that, and the fact, as Nick said, that he's been in so many different spots and won at so many different levels, but given his age and the situation, he could probably be very comfortable having an assistant coach who has NHL experience, maybe a former head coach beside him on that bench, to bring that level of information and intelligence.
I'm glad you asked him about the assistants as well, because if you go back in Willie's history and you look at University of Calgary, for example, I mean, here, you know, his assistant there was Mike Johnson of the Portland Winterhawks, who now, as John Shannon talked about on Twitter today, is interviewing with the Pittsburgh Penguins for that position. Would it surprise anyone, considering Mike Johnson did interview with the Vancouver Canucks, if not just Willie Desjardins is on the bench there in Vancouver, but also Mike Johnson as well from Portland?
I don't see. Why
you go back?
Why,
to Portland?
Johnson, why would you? This time next year, you could be in the mix for three or four jobs. I think it. it wouldn't be a progressive move for him. I think he's probably put himself in a position to be a legitimate guy, and they went with Willie in Vancouver, but they could have easily gone in that direction. I'd sooner wait a year and still be that guy on the outside that's knocking on the door.
What do you think, Scotty?
Well, I think it's how married is Mike to being an NHL head coach, and is your best route to just take the step back, if you will, and continue as a junior guy, or do you think you'd get there faster by being an NHL assistant? I guess you have to weigh that in your mind. But you know, Nick's point is a good one in that you wait a year, there's inevitably going to be 2, 3, 4 sure, openings. And you're not going to, you know, if you go into a good job again and have a successful team, you're not going to hurt yourself.
In many ways, it's great for coaches today. In many ways, it's worse for coaches today. The pressure that they have on them in terms of delivering wins right away, man. It's like, remember, they don't have a salary cap. You can get rid of them. It might cost you some money, but you can get rid of them. You can hire them. You can. There's more flexibility to blame them more than ever.
Is that
if that makes any sense?
It does, and you wonder too if that's what Dan Bylsma is counting on now at this point. I think when he was fired from Pittsburgh, we all said, "Well, you know, he'll be unemployed as long as he wants to be unemployed." But here he is, still unemployed,
and maybe you
wait,
and he's getting a paycheck.
Except, you know, I believe he would have been hired yesterday, but there's a financial anchor around his neck right now. You know, it's almost like Luongo.
Poor guy.
His contract sucks. It's 2+ a year.
Yeah.
And there are some teams that just don't want to spend that. They're tapped.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at...
He's making so much money, he can't afford to work.
I know. It's a great way to put it. You look around the NHL, I mean, how quickly was Peter Laviolette starched last year? Right? So if you're Dan Bylsma, you're also probably thinking to yourself, and listen, if Dan Bylsma were available at this time last year, I would have a hard time believing that Ed Snyder wouldn't have said, you know what, yeah, we'll pay that for Dan Bylsma, as opposed to going for, you know, Craig Berube, who, even though he did a really good job with the Flyers, was still an unproven commodity at the NHL level. If you're Bylsma, are you just sitting back and maybe not cherry-picking your position, but knowing that one is coming down
the pipe?
He
picked the right spot.
And he's got 2 years. 2 years at $4-plus million. So He's in a position, and we do believe that there was conversations with the Vancouver Canucks, but that's now, if you're the Aquilini family, you factor in what you're paying Gillis, what you're factoring in paying Tortorella.
And Luongo.
You're
paying a lot of money for
paying a lot of people to stay away.
Yeah.
Right? So now, you know, that's even if you could cut a deal with Pittsburgh and convince them that they should pick up some of the coin on the next 2 years of his deal. But then after that, what do you pay year three, year four, year five? He's not going to want a pay cut. He's going to want $7.5 million, I think. You know, 2.3, 2.4. It'll be expensive with his resume.
You asked Lou Lamoriello a couple of moments ago when we had him on the program, Nick. How frisky do you expect things to be this week leading up to the NHL draft? What are your indications?
Yeah, I think there's more players available for trade than probably there's ever been since I've covered broadcasting in 16 years.
And prominent players.
Prominent players, you know? Prominent players. Chicago now, they're looking for a centerman. Patrick Sharp's available. He's out there. Boys, he's out there.
Patrick Sharp
is out there right now, and we're gonna continue to hear some big names that are available.
Well, you got Spezza, you got Thornton, now we got Sharp,
Ryan Kessler. I mean, there's a number of them, and maybe others that surprise us that jump out between now and the NHL draft.
Talk about the Flyers wanting to make a big splash this weekend and would love to move up. And Ed Snyder wants to go right to the top.
And you'd think that Braden Coburn would be one of those players who'd be available from the Philadelphia Flyers. It'll be a curious time indeed. All the more reason to keep it right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Also on Hockey Central, both radio and television properties. And, of course, sportsnet.ca, where we document all of it. On behalf of Scott and Nick, Jeff Merrick signing off. Thanks for joining us on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.